When the Second World War came along, as you know, we had a group of pacifists in our care, the conscientious objectors, who were turned over to the peace churches, the Quakers, the Mennonites, and the Brethren in this country, to look after them. And I won't say that the men that had decided to take this position needed too much new indoctrination. They'd already made a difficult decision. But at any rate, the expenses of this fell entirely on our committee and the money it could raise. And it did give us an acquaintance with young idealistic people of this sort. So that, unfortunately, with the end of wholesale conscription, the end of CPS, we have a smaller pool of available personnel. We had plenty of people we could find that we knew well, who worked in these camps, and whose ideals and purposes we understood, and we drew upon them for our later programs. We're not the only people that feel that way. A good many of them refused to register and went to the federal prisons. And they were an interesting influence in the prisons, these conscientious objectors were. And from the point of view of the prison, a pretty wholesome influence. Not long ago, Mr. Bennett, the head of the Federal Bureau of Prisons, was talking to one of our committee and said he wished he could find a way and wished he could get a lot of Quakers back into prison, that they'd be very helpful if he could get them back. We didn't encourage him to use any illegal means to get them back, and the legal means weren't operating very wholesale at that time. What I found in all of us found in the CPS camps was that the people there, the boys that were there working, talked a great deal more on the race question than they did on the peace question. They were either exposed to it, being in some of the southern camps, or were aware of the urgency of that question. And I think I may say, long before their elders discovered the urgency of this question, the rank and file of the young people in the service committee were very much disturbed by it. The thing that most disturbed them, of course, was discrimination by Quaker schools and Quaker employers and Quaker hotels against Negroes. And they began on that. But this led, this and the growing concern in America led to forming an active organization in the service committee for seeing what we could do on the race question. The chapter you read by Ira Reed in a book this year tells you something of what was done, and all I need say that since that book was written, the work has increased and become more intensive than anything. We have a dozen regional offices scattered through the country, and the racial problem is very significant in even the northern offices, and therefore it's been possible to expand the work for race. It's a difficult task to know where to begin when the problem is so big.
To being on the board of directors of the American Friends Service Committee, does one have to be a Quaker?
Yes. That's been
in other words, Dr. Reed's a Quaker.
He is a Quaker, yes. That doesn't mean that the employees are Quakers or the workers. No, the boys and girls currently assembled with his visa program. I don't remember Tanganyika. I know or Kenya, where we have a fairly large group.
50%.
About 50% in the visa program. It's not a fixed quota. Not any quota, that's just the way it happens to be at the moment. I don't know whether I should mention any aspects of the Negro problem. One current situation we have been working on is Prince Edward County in Virginia. It's a county where the schools are all closed. No Negro has been able to go to a public school for 2 or 3 years. Soon after that developed, we went to the county, got the boys and girls that were within a year of graduation from school, found the homes and schools in the north where they could finish, and brought them to the north so they could finish their school education. Meanwhile, we have some workers in the county talking with the liberal whites that are there and with the Negroes, and hopefully, I think, preparing for the reopening of the schools perhaps next September. And this summer, we have been asked to go down by the school board there. Some of our people who've dealt with this problem of reintegrating or integrating schools. We began this in Washington with the staff there, and their experience in community, we hope, will enable this county to open schools for Negroes, I mean, available to Negroes, with the minimum of difficulty. Mr. Dallolio, one of our problems of conscience came from Washington, where we were working on the trying to get the playgrounds and movie theaters and so on integrated so that the colored and white would not have to be separated. One day we got a letter from our worker down there saying, we find that the bars, the liquor bars in the Washington are all segregated. Shall we work on them? My answer would be yes, but you might say that sort of a stinger might think that would be a little bit of a problem of conscience. Speaking of problems of conscience, a very interesting grant we had was from the Ford Foundation. This was a lump grant, saying that with our experience with conscientious objectors, we knew pretty well just how far the American law actually defended conscience in practice. We knew all these cases, these border cases came up, and they gave us this money to experiment with to see if we couldn't take on cases that would extend the protection of conscience in America. That is, going beyond the situation where we are. A difficult thing to do, and I won't say we found many opportunities to do it, but the idea wasn't a bad one of the Ford people, the actual defense of conscience is limited in this country. You take the whole business of teachers' oaths. That was one of the props was up at that time, or loyalty oaths of all kinds. As I've already said, we have a dozen offices in the United States, and we work out in, whereas our foreign work has to be pretty well unified, and because it's all done from a central office here in Philadelphia. These offices, three on the West Coast, and two in the South, and some in the Middle West, and one in New England, one in North Carolina, enable us to cover a wider field. And I want to say again that although it's under the name of the American Friends Service Committee, it really catches and finds workers and supporters who agree with these ideals without perhaps knowing too much about Quakers. Most of them haven't had the benefit of this course. But it's one way of learning, and the association and the perhaps over-idealistic understanding of Quakerism has drawn these people into supporting our work. I'm sorry if I've talked somewhat autobiographically, but when you're in the work and know it firsthand, you'll meet, a great many humorous situations, to say the least, and a great many difficult situations. And you'll catch that much, at least, from our experience in this field. Next time, I hope to say something about what the effect of this work has been in various ways, how it's affected friends and non-friends, and some of its great shortcomings. And perhaps you'll have some questions to ask when we meet again. These books here now are at your disposal.
Hey, Dave, that was...